Proverbs 31, verses 27 through 31, we are probably familiar with this passage speaking of the worthy woman who also was a mother, of course, as we read here. She looks well to the ways of her household. She doesn't eat the bread of idleness. Her children rise up and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praises her. Many daughters have done virtuously, but you excel them all. Favor is deceitful, and beauty is vain, but a woman that fears the Lord, she shall be praised. Give her of the fruit of her hands, and let her own works praise her in the gates. Now, obviously, this passage doesn't say there's anything wrong with being attractive or having favor in some way, but what it points out is that those things go away. Those things don't last. No woman gets to keep the beauty that she had in her youth. She may continue to remain an attractive woman for her age, but she never regains what she had when she was young. But when it comes to fearing the Lord and being godly, a woman can continue to grow in beauty with each passing year. And that's a wonderful thing. In fact, there are many situations where a woman who may not have been considered attractive in the physical sense can be absolutely beautiful in the spiritual sense. And that's more important, because God is not running a beauty pageant. He's not going to determine who gets to go to heaven based on how much favorability they had with people around them or how physically attractive they were. But what he's basing it on is, do you fear me and keep my commandments? That's what he's looking for. And so we want to encourage women, first of all, to be godly, to consider that there is more to them than the outside appearance. Most of us have probably seen someone who physically was very attractive, but they were ugly on the inside. And we've probably also seen someone who was not considered to be particularly attractive on the outside, but we knew that person and knew that they were a beautiful soul. And so we recognize that, although sometimes we, because our eyes give us so much information in our brains, sometimes our eyes overpower our minds. And so what we see affects us more than it should many times. And of course our eyes can be deceived like that as well. But I want us to look at nine things, and we're going to run through them quickly. And I know if you saw the sign out there, we're going to talk about growing the church. We'll do that in the second service. I wanted to go ahead and touch on this about mothers in this session here. But as we think about how to encourage mothers, there are several mothers in the Bible that I want to encourage mothers to be like. As we look at the scriptures, we see examples both good and bad in the Old and New Testament, all throughout the Bible. There are good examples, there are bad examples, there are people to imitate and people to stay away from and not ever want to be like. But we want to look at some things that are profitable and positive about some of the mothers in the Bible. So I want to encourage mothers to be like Hannah. Hannah, who prayed that God would give her a child and then dedicated that child to God's service. 1 Samuel 1 and verse 11, she vowed a vow and said, O Lord of hosts, if you will indeed look on the affliction of your handmaid and remember me and not forget your handmaid, but will give to your handmaid a man-child, then I will give him to the Lord all the days of his life, and there shall no razor come upon his head. They think about what she promised. If you'll give me a son, I'm going to give him back to you. Now perhaps we wouldn't do it in the way that Hannah did, where she took him to the temple and just dropped him off there for Eli to finish raising him. Maybe not like that, but all of us could say, hey, if I have every child, we're going to dedicate that thing. And we want to encourage young parents to start. There's probably not anything that I can think of that more people have talked to me about the wishes that they'd had for if I'd have known better back then than how they raised their children. that the children, if I'd have known, if I could have done better back then. And so we need to encourage young people and young mothers to get started early. Devote that child's life to God from the beginning. Teach that child from the very beginning to be a servant for the Lord. And not wait till they're 20 or 30 and then wish we could start training them then. It's too late. Many times they're already off on their own things by that point. Even by the 8th and 9th and 10-year-old ages, they're already going. They've already got their own thoughts in their head by then. And so we've got to start very young with them from the beginning. But secondly, I want to encourage mothers to be like the Shunammite woman, who could truthfully say, "It is well with me and with my child," even when her child had died. Can you imagine? That's a difficult thing. That's so tough to even think about for anyone who's never experienced that. But this woman was able to say when she was asked, "How is everything? How's it going with your husband and with you and with your child?" 2 Kings 4:26, "Run now, I pray you, and meet her and say to her, 'Is it well with you? Is it well with your husband? Is it well with your child?'" And he ran and she answered, "It is well." Now, how many of us would think if a child had died, "Oh, it's well with me"? No, that's the furthest from well that we could be just about. And yet this woman, because she loved the Lord, was able to still say, "It's well with me." Kind of like Job, even though he suffered so much, he didn't just lose one child, he lost 10. And yet he was still able to say, "I trust the Lord." Even though he's allowing all these things to happen to me, I still love him and serve him. But then I also want to encourage mothers to be like Jochebed. Jochebed, Moses' mother, had the courage and the forethought to protect her child from the evil forces, and she trained him to love God and God's work above the wealth and power of a king's court. How many people do you know who, if they had the choice to choose, "Oh, I'm going to have to go live out in the wilderness with some sheep for a while. I'm going to have to run for my life. Or I could stay and hang out in the king's palace and have all the nicest food and nicest clothes and nicest everything." How many people would choose? And yet that's exactly what the Bible says about Moses. He chose to suffer affliction. He chose that. He had those two choices before him: pleasure and enjoyment and all of the gifts and profits and benefits of being in the royal household, versus suffering and affliction and wandering around in the wilderness. And he picked that one. That says something about his mother. I'm sure it probably says something about his father too, but his mother is the one that was nursemaid to him until the time that he was weaned. And she taught him who he was. Exodus 2, verses 2 through 4, "The woman conceived and bare a son. When she saw that he was a good child, she hid him 3 months. And when she could hide him no longer, she took for him an ark of bulrushes and dabbed it with slime and pitch and put the child in it and laid it in the reeds by the river's bank. And his sister stood afar off to see what was happened to him." And so they watched him at a time when it was the law that they had to kill those little baby boys. She didn't do that. She didn't give in to what the law of the land said. Then I also want to encourage mothers to be like Rachel. Rachel, whose teenage son could resist the temptations of an evil woman when he was far, far away from home and far away from any more guidance from her. You know, probably one of the scariest things for a lot of parents is when their children get old enough that they're leaving home. They're flying the coop, so to speak. They're leaving the nest. And it's a scary time. Joseph left the nest earlier than he was supposed to. He left earlier because his brothers didn't like him and they sold him into slavery. That's how he wound up leaving home. Hopefully none of our children will leave home like that or ever did. But this fella, even as a young teenager, knew how to resist temptation and evil. He went and he was the kind of person that God wanted him to be. Even though his mother wasn't there, his father wasn't there, none of his family was there, none of God's people were around him to tell him what to do or to encourage him to do what was right. He was surrounded by foreigners, by heathens, by people who didn't even believe in the same God that he did. And yet he was strong enough to stand firm for God and resist the temptation of Potiphar's wife, when she day after day would try to seduce him. And even to the extent that he ran away when he had to get away from her. Now some have suggested that probably, well, you know, she was an ugly woman and he wasn't interested in her, and that's why he was resisting her. I don't think that's the case. Potiphar was a wealthy man, and he probably had the choice. You know, we notice that, don't we? Really rich people, he may be ugly as everything, but a really rich guy, he's always got him a pretty wife, doesn't he? A lot of times she's a lot younger than him. Maybe it's his third wife, or, you know, fourth or 57th. You know, but he's always got a pretty wife, and yet... And so, you know, the thing is, Potiphar, he probably had his pick of some of the women of the land. She wasn't an ugly old woman that Joseph wouldn't have been attracted to at all. She would have been an attractive woman. And he was strong enough to resist that. But then also, want to encourage mothers to be like Noah's wife. And we don't even know what Noah's wife's name was. Isn't that amazing? Unnamed heroes of the Bible. We know about Noah, but what about his wife? Of all the people on earth, only Noah and his family were saved from the flood. And Noah's wife and her three sons. Now certainly it says something about Noah, but it says something about his wife as well. It says something about those boys' mother. That of all the people on earth, all three of their sons were able to go on the ark. Not just one of them, but nobody else got to go, but all three of their sons were able to go. Now, to some degree, of course, we know that God allowed them to go because of His grace. Even Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. None of them earned it or deserved to get saved from the flood. But God chose that family for a reason. They were a family that feared Him. And you know that Noah, working for 100 years building that ark, you know that no 600-year-old man, 500- and 600-year-old man, did that on his own. Those boys helped him. They were young whippersnappers. All of them were under 100. So, you know, these young guys, you know, they wasn't older than 80 or 90 when they got done with it. You know, they're still young. But you think about a 500-year-old man building an ark that size by himself? I don't think so. There's no way he was going to do that by himself. Have you ever, and I know some of you ladies probably haven't, done big construction projects, but you ever try to build something? I mean, not even as big as an ark, but if you just try to build you an 8x8-foot shed, you try doing that by yourself without somebody else to hold the other end of that board while you're trying to nail it up. You just can't do it. And can you imagine a thing as big as that ark and trying to build it, try to hold, here, I'll hold this end of the beam and then I'll put a nail in it and then I'll go down there and lift up the other end of the beam. He had some help from those boys. And their mother had trained them to be helpers, to be workers, and to serve. And because of that, Genesis 7:7 says, Noah went in, and his sons, and his wife and his sons' wives with him into the ark because of the waters of the flood. You know, it says something about the mother sometimes too, the choices her sons make about the wife they pick. These three boys all picked wives that got to go on that boat as well. And that didn't have to be the case. They could have, of all the women in the world, that now there wasn't any righteous women out there just hanging around. They didn't get to just go to church and try to find them a good woman. There weren't a lot of good people on the earth in those days. And yet they managed to find three young ladies that were sufficiently good that they were able to go on the ark with them. Their parents had taught them well. And then I want to encourage mothers to be like the Canaanite mother who cried out to Jesus to help her daughter. You know, there are many times in our lives where we've done all we can do. We've tried, we've taught, we've pleaded, we've done everything that we can imagine being able to do. And yet still those children, we can't help them with everything, can we? We can't always be there. We can't always make decisions for them or do things for them. And sometimes they're going to make the wrong decisions, and sometimes they're going to go the wrong direction. And when that happens, we need to be like that Canaanite mother, and we need to encourage mothers to be like that Canaanite mother and cry out to Jesus for help. Because there are times when it's beyond our help. Matthew 15:22-28, this woman of Canaan came out of the coast, and she cried, saying, "Have mercy on me, O Lord, Son of David. My daughter is grievously vexed with the devil." Notice what she said. Have mercy on me. Have we noticed that? Sometimes when our children are misbehaving, it doesn't even seem to bother them. They may be vexed with the devil, and they may be enjoying being vexed with the devil. They may be enjoying following the devil and doing the things that please the devil. They may be having a good time, having fun, living life. But it hurts us, doesn't it? It hurts the parent to see those things happening. So she begged the Lord, "Have mercy on me." And then my daughter has a devil. Now, he didn't answer her right away. And the disciples came and said, "Look, send her away. She's causing trouble. She's coming along. She's crying out. She's disturbing everybody. Send her away." And so he said, "Well, you know, I was only sent to the lost sheep of the house of Israel, and she was a Canaanite, remember. According to the law of Moses, she shouldn't be alive. The Canaanites were supposed to have been wiped out 1,500 years earlier. 1,000 years earlier than this. But here she is, and she's crying out to the Lord." And he said then, "You know, I've only come to the lost sheep of Israel." And she said, "Well, but Lord, even the dogs get to eat the crumbs that fall off the table." She said, just give me some of the crumbs. Just anything to help me. When we're helpless, we need to turn to the Lord of the helpless. He said, "O woman, your faith is great. Let it be to you as you wish." And her daughter was made whole because of that. Now I want to encourage mothers to be like Mary, the mother of John Mark, who put the church first in her home, and quite literally put the church in her home. Acts chapter 12 and verse 12, Peter was in prison and the church was praying. The church had gathered together to pray for Peter because he was in jail and the king wanted him dead. Of course, the angel came and released him. But guess where they were praying? Well, they weren't down at the local church building. They weren't at the preacher's house. They were at Mary's house. It says, and Peter knew it. Peter, when he got out and he realized, first he thought it was a dream, thought, "Well, God's just sending me a vision." And then he realized, "Hey, I'm actually out of jail. And I'm walking around here. What do I do? Where do I go?" And when he considered it, you know what he thought? "I'm going to go to Mary's house." Why would he go to Mary's house? Well, I'm going to go to Mary's house. For one thing, because that's where the church would be getting together. I know she's a faithful woman, and I know that's a place I can go. And so he went there. And sure enough, when he got there, guess what was happening? Many were gathered together in her house, praying for him to be released. Of course, that's a funny story in and of itself. And that little lady that went and answered the door when Peter came to the door, she's quite a character as well. She's a good example for our young people to have courage, even when sometimes those adults around you will tell you you're wrong. They thought she was crazy. They thought she was hearing voices. Thought she was imagining things. Thought she'd seen a vision of Peter's ghost. And she said, "Look, let me tell you something. Peter's out there at the gate. I know he's at the gate." She stood firm on what she knew to be right. And that's a good thing for our young people. I don't know who her mother was, but her mother taught her well as well. And she learned that, sometimes you have to stand up to people who are opposing you. When you know what's right, you stand up for it. And I want to encourage mothers to be like Lois, who taught her child God's word from infancy and molded his life so that he became a faithful servant of the Master. Paul, in writing to Timothy in 2 Timothy 1:5, says, "When I call to remembrance the unfeigned," the King James says, "sincere," it's a real faith that dwelt first in your grandmother Lois and your mother Eunice, and I am persuaded in you also. And we could really mention Eunice here as well, Lois and Eunice both. Lois passed it on to her daughter, who then passed it on to her son. In 2 Timothy 3:14 and 15, he says to Timothy, "Continue in the things that you have learned and have been assured of, knowing from whom you've learned them, and that from a child you have known the Holy Scriptures, which are able to make you wise to salvation through faith in Jesus Christ." When we think about what his mother and grandmother did and how each one taught and passed on the Scriptures and the faith that's contained through those Scriptures, what an amazing thing to think about. Three generations here. What a good example. And then I want to encourage mothers to be like Mary, the mother of Jesus. We talked about Mary, the mother of John Mark a minute ago, but what about Mary, the mother of Jesus? She thought a lot. She wasn't real talkative. We don't have but just a very handful of statements of Mary in the Scriptures. Just a few little things that she said. But one thing that is said more than once is that she kept these things in her heart. When things would happen, she'd hear things. There was a prophecy made. Jesus would say something. She'd take it to heart. And she'd hold on to that. And she'd remember that. And she'd think about that. Her submission to God's will was so perfect and so complete. Can you imagine what kind of woman she must have been that the God of heaven chose her to be the mother of his child? She must have been something special. Now, it's an interesting thing. We don't read a single word in the Scripture about what she looked like. Don't have any idea whether she was even considered attractive or not physically. But we know spiritually she was beautiful. She had to be. God wasn't going to pick somebody who was half-hearted or some heathen or somebody that was even just, the average person. He was going to pick somebody who loved him unconditionally to be the mother of his child, his son, Jesus Christ. Why would he pick anything less than the best? She was so concerned about her son's welfare that she didn't forsake him even when all others did. She followed him in love even to death. Luke 2:19 says, Mary kept all these things and pondered them in her heart. And then, of course, we read about Mary and some of the other women standing near Jesus at the cross. How many mothers, if their son was convicted as a traitor and was going to be executed as a traitor to the nation, how many mothers would disown that son and say, I don't know what's wrong. That's his father's boy. I don't know that boy. But here she was standing by the cross watching her son be crucified. As a traitor to the Roman government. Now she knew he wasn't. She knew who he really was. But the embarrassment of that alone would probably keep a lot of people from being there. Even his own disciples had all fled except for John. But here she was. She didn't have to talk a lot. Mary never spent a lot of time teaching lessons, telling people things. She never once went around saying, hey, my son Jesus, he's the Son of God. Angel came. We don't read about that at all. On one occasion, she told some servants, whatever he says to you, you do it. One time. That's in John 2 when he turned the water to wine. That's the only time that we see her telling anybody anything about Jesus. But boy, that was good advice, wasn't it? Whatever he tells you to do, you do it. She didn't talk a lot. What she does say, pretty powerful. Let's encourage mothers to be like these women of the Bible. Perhaps you haven't been doing that. Perhaps you haven't helped encourage mothers at all. Or maybe you've encouraged mothers in the wrong direction. Maybe you've said things that discouraged mothers. Whatever it might be, perhaps you have a need to respond to God's invitation this morning. If you're here and you have a need to change something about your life and you need the prayers of the church to help you do that. If you're not a Christian and you need to become one, you can do that this morning. If you come repenting of your sins, believing on Jesus Christ as the Son of God, being buried with Him in baptism upon confessing your faith in Him as the Son of God, and have those sins washed away. Whatever needs you might have, please come as we stand and sing.